The Undivided Podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, a new proposed bill in Olympia is almost beyond comprehension why there should be bipartisan opposition to lessening the penalty for those who commit drive-by shootings and kill. Also, the saga of Washington's long-term care tax is the Christmas present that none of us wanted, why lawmakers should fix this before the new year. And finally, a new bill proposed in Congress would help military families become financially stable. I speak with the lawmaker behind the bill, U.S. Representative Marilyn Strickland of Washington's 10th.
And I think sometimes we forget people often turn to entrepreneurship when they have a hard time in the job market.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us on the Undivided Podcast on this Christmas Eve. I will tell you, my Christmas Eve started off a little enraged. I was tipped off by an Undivided subscriber to a new bill that has been filed for the 2022 legislative session in Washington State. And it has me upset on a number of fronts. Because it's Christmas Eve, though, I'm gonna get to that toward the end of the podcast. Because if you would just like to go on with your Christmas not upset, you can listen to the first half of the podcast. And then I'm gonna dive into that to close today. I just think it's too important. I was like, gosh, I don't even know if I want to touch this topic on Christmas Eve. But this is one of those things where you got to get ahead of it before it gets traction and momentum. And so that's what we're going to try to do not only today, but Sunday on the digital show. So let's start today with a topic we can all agree on that we appreciate and celebrate our military families, especially this time of year. There are many who are serving abroad, who are away from their loved ones, and we thank them and are grateful for their service every single day, but especially on the holidays as we surround ourselves with our own family and friends, and some of our members of the armed forces are unable to. And in that spirit, I wanted to talk about a new proposed bill in Congress. One of the backers of the bill is Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland of Washington's 10th Congressional District, a Democrat. And she has a lot of military families in her constituency because of Joint Base Lewis-McChord. She has proposed a new bill that would help prioritize military spouses in receiving government contracts. She and I spoke about it. Tell me about the Military Spouse Entrepreneurs Act.
Right. Well, first of all, thanks for having me here, Brandy. So I introduced the Military Entrepreneur Spouse Act because, you know, people sometimes forget that when military families move around from place to place, it's hard for their spouses to find jobs. And I remind folks, too, that spouses can be men or they can be women, right? And so we just want to find a way to help spouses who are entrepreneurs get access to federal contracting because we're making these massive investments in infrastructure and so much. And so this is a pilot program that's going to have a set aside that will allow military spouses who are contractors and business owners to get access to these contracts.
So how does that work? Does it set a certain threshold or percentage for the number of contracts that should go to them? Does it give them preference points?
Yeah, so it's a set aside. So it's a percentage. So it's 5%. And it's an opportunity for the Small Business Administration to say, okay, let's try this program out in different markets where we know we have a large military population and opportunities for contractors to get access to work. And a couple of data points I want to share with you. 57% of military spouses report being underemployed where they are in jobs that don't pay commensurate with their experience. And then the unemployment rate is somewhere around 25 to 28%. And so we're trying to make sure that military families have financial security as well.
And you had mentioned, you know, off the beginning, you've got a population that's moving around sometimes very frequently. And you mentioned you've heard from military spouses who are discriminated against. Is it because of that sort of transient nature of their lives?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that, you know, when you look at employers trying to make a decision about hiring someone, you know, if someone reveals that they're a military spouse, they think, well, they're going to move soon. So why would I invest in someone? And so I think that, you know, this is an opportunity to make it more fair and more equitable so that military spouses get access to contracting opportunities. And I think sometimes we forget people often turn to entrepreneurship when they have a hard time in the job market.
What do you anticipate in terms of the types of contracts that might be set aside for military families?
You know, I would say a few things. I mean, I think sometimes we forget that, you know, in government contracting, it's everything from soup to nuts, right? It could be someone who runs a custodial business. It could be someone who is a CPA. It could be someone who's a project manager. And then just some of these large, you know, infrastructure projects where we're working on to repair roads and bridges. It could be flaggers. So really just the entire spectrum where the federal government would hire someone as a contractor and just, again, opening up the opportunities to as many people as possible.
What kind of pushback do you anticipate? I mean, whenever you set a priority for a certain population of people, you're always going to have pushback that says that's unfair to the competitive marketplace. So how are you going to answer pushback from other individuals who are also trying to compete for government contracts?
Well, I say this, Brandy. I said, you know, we have, I think historically people have thought, well, there's a very finite number of contracting opportunities because there was a slice of the pie available. With all these investments that we're making right now, that pie is large enough and there's plenty for everyone. But we want to make sure the system provides access to everyone. What's good about this, you know, this effort is that it's, you know, it's a bipartisan effort, and we're going to have an opportunity to, you know, bring people on both sides of the aisle who support our military families. Another data point that I think is important too, because I talk about the lens of equity, especially racial equity, is that 43% of the people who serve in the military are people of color. And so as we talk about, you know, ways to provide economic opportunity for as many people as possible, this is one mechanism to do that as well.
What was the genesis for this, Congresswoman? Was it something you heard from a constituent?
Yeah, you know, I think it was just, you know, serving on the House Armed Services Committee and having Joint Base Lewis McChord right in the middle of my district and being a military brat myself. You know, I just thought about ways that I could affect military families in a positive way and help provide economic security for as many people as possible. So as we did more research, we said, you know, why don't we create a pilot program? Because military spouses, again, high underemployment rate, high unemployment rates, and just doing what we can to give them some security for their families.
So would one of those pilot programs be in Washington's 10th Congressional District?
It absolutely could. And we know that, you know, we're doing so much here. You know, we are still building out, you know, Sound Transit 3, which has federal funds. We are going to get a slug of money from the Infrastructure Act. And so there are tons of opportunities here just to be very intentional about trying to help, you know, our military spouses get access.
You mentioned the hope for bipartisanship. Usually when it comes to helping our men and women in uniform, we can anticipate some level of bipartisanship, but you never know these days. So have you had any bipartisan interest expressed?
Yeah, I think there will be. And here's what I say. You know, I serve on the House Armed Services Committee. And when we approved that national defense budget, it was approved 57-3 out of our committee. And so I think that is, you know, indicative of the fact that regardless of where you live in the country, if you have a military base in your community, you want to do what you can to support those families. And so I would say that, you know, military affairs and transportation infrastructure are two of the places in Congress where you can actually get bipartisan support for things to move forward in what often feels like a very fractured and divided place.
Just to give you an opportunity for our men and women in uniform and their families this holiday season, do you have a message for them?
Absolutely. You know, I want to say thank you so much for your service and your sacrifice. This is for those who serve and wear the uniform, and also the families. You know, these families make a lot of sacrifices and they travel, and a lot of is expected of them. So I just want to wish them all a safe and joyous holiday season, whether they're here at home or serving somewhere internationally, and to please stay safe.
I'll have more from the Congresswoman Sunday on the Undivided Digital Show. We're also going to talk about what happened with the Build Back Better Act. We're going to talk about Joe Manchin and things that she believes Democrats and Republicans might be able to work together on in the new year. Now to the Christmas gift that all of us would like to give back this year in Washington State. If you listen to this podcast, we have been following the saga of Washington's long-term care tax for some time. So this was a tax passed by the legislature in 2019. Republicans opposed it. The Democratic majority pushed it through. It would take 58 cents from every $100 you make, and it would put that into a long-term care fund. And then if you qualify when you get older, you can get a one-time payout of up to $36,500 to help with the cost of long-term care. Now, Republicans had been sounding the alarm for a long time on this because there were just some inherent issues with the bill. For instance, if you lived in Idaho or Oregon, but crossed the border to work into Washington state, the tax would be collected from your paycheck, but you'd never be able to benefit from it. If you decided to retire out of Washington state, you'd have paid that tax your entire working life and never be able to benefit from it. If you're close to retirement, you would start to pay that tax at a time when you should be saving every penny you can, but you wouldn't work long enough to be vested in it. So there are a number of obvious issues that Republicans were trying to make Democrats understand. And so this time went by and it was supposed to take effect coming up here on January 1st. But Democrats finally, I guess, realized all the issues with it and asked the governor to put a pause on it. And apparently they want to take this next legislative session to try to sort some of these things out. The issue is that the governor can put a pause on the state collecting the money from businesses, but businesses still have to follow the law that's in place. And so starting January 1st, businesses still need to take this money out of people's paychecks. Okay, well, what if they do that and then the law never goes into place? Maybe it's repealed down the road. What if you're a business and you say, I don't think this law is ever going to go into effect, so I'm not going to collect that money, and then later on you have to? So it's created this entire mess. And the governor put out a statement about it, which I just have to say is so funny. He put out this statement, funny like sad, but he put out the statement on December 23rd, basically blaming the media for not helping people understand this, what's going on with this. He said, there seems to be some inaccurate reporting and misinformation about the legislature's long-term care bill, which under the law requires employers to withhold money from employee wages. I love how the governor says, tries to distance himself from it, from saying it's the legislature's long-term care bill when he signed it and supported it at the time. But he goes on to remind businesses that they should still be collecting this money from paychecks starting January 1st. He says, we know that many private employers are doing this and others are hoping that the legislature will change the law. However, if the legislature fails to do so, employers will still be legally obligated to pay the full amount owed to the state to begin the long-term care program. The legislature will have an opportunity, this is the governor, the legislature will have an opportunity to fix their bill starting on January 10th when they convene for the session. It is my hope that they will do that quickly in order to provide clarity to employees and employers. I have considerable confidence that the legislature will fix this problem. So first of all, the governor cannot blame the media for inaccurate reporting and misinformation. They have created the biggest cluster, you know what, when it comes to this bill. Any and all confusion that exists as a result is the fault of the governor and is the fault of the politicians who passed this without giving it enough thought, period. Don't use the press as a scapegoat for your blunder. Second of all, the governor talks about the legislature fixing this on January 10th. That is too late. It should have been fixed already. You are now plopping this blunder in the hands of employers who have to decide whether they want to take this money out of people's paychecks that they might actually not end up having to give to the state, or if they want to hold off on taking the money out of paychecks and then be on the hook for it later on. It is unfair to put businesses in this situation due to your incompetence as a state government. And this can be fixed. This can be fixed before January 1st, and it needs to be fixed. State lawmakers can easily call a remote session. They can call a remote session to put this on pause. There is a full week next week, 5 days, to make this happen. And it is the duty of the legislature to do it. You need to clean up your own mess, not leave that mess for employers to bear the brunt of. Not have employees see money taken out of their wages during such an important time of the year and in the middle of a pandemic, even if it's just for 10 days. This is your fault, not theirs. Now, Republicans already asked for a special session. They want to see this repealed. They're not going to get that. But at the very least, both sides should be able to come together and put a pause on this. That's the least that they owe taxpayers. The statement from Republican leaders says, we need to go into a special session before the state begins collecting this tax, even if it's over the holidays, using virtual technology to meet on short notice. And look, is that inconvenient for lawmakers? Sure it is. Is that the way that they want to spend their holidays? Of course not. But this is what you signed up for. You've also placed a tremendous inconvenience on employers and on workers across the state. You created this inconvenience, and it is up to you to fix it. Do it this coming week and show that you can acknowledge mistakes, take responsibility for them, and fix them. Now I need to take my festive Christmas hat off even further. I realized I was already off a little bit with my rant on the long-term care tax. Oh, you know, Undivided in this podcast, it's really, it goes back to just the basic tenets of common sense and really encouraging leaders to use reason and logic and to do things that are in the best interest of their constituency. There is a lawmaker in the Washington State House of Representatives who made national news when she was elected to office because she's believed to be the first formerly incarcerated person elected to the State House, Tara Simmons. She's a convicted felon. And I will say about Tara, I like her very much. She is, I think, an example for one's ability to turn their lives around and to do something productive and important. And so I'm going to preface this with that. And I've reached out to Tara Simmons about this bill I'm going to discuss. And I am open-minded to hearing her explanation for why she believes this is something that she needs to spend her time and put her power toward. That being said, I will say this flat out. I believe it is one of the most tone-deaf bills that I have seen proposed in the Washington State Legislature in my decade living here covering politics. I was tipped off to this by actually an Undivided subscriber, Daniel, who, God bless him, monitors some of the bills that are pre-filed going into the legislative session, and he sent me this. It is House Bill 1692. I'll read you the first couple lines. An act relating to promoting racial equity in the criminal legal system by eliminating drive-by shooting as a basis for elevating murder in the first degree to aggravated murder in the first degree. So this is a bill that's purpose is to ease punishments for people who commit drive-by shootings and kill someone. And not only that, the bill would make it retroactive. So if someone is sitting in prison and they were convicted of aggravated murder in the first degree because they committed a drive-by shooting and their target died, then that person would be able to be resentenced. Look, Tara Simmons has done bills that pertain to the criminal justice system. And that makes sense. That's her background. That's where her experience lies. And that's why she got into politics in the first place, to reform what she believes is a flawed system. And I believe that there's a lot of opportunities to help individuals who are incarcerated get back on their feet more quickly, become productive members of society. She's had some bills in that regard. But this is not that. I should note this bill does have a co-sponsor, Representative David Hackney. He is of the 11th legislative district in our state, which includes parts of Seattle, Renton, Tukwila, and a little bit of Kent, which is interesting because that's the area where we have the most drive-by shootings. And so I'd be curious to hear his thoughts on this as well. And again, I am open to speaking to Representative Simmons, to hearing her rationale for this, and I have contacted her. This bill seems almost entirely designed to help out dangerous criminals. Do you realize, and of course you do, because if you're listening to this, you have common sense, the absolute disregard for human life that you have to put a gun out a moving vehicle and pull the trigger. How many stories have we heard of bullets flying through homes, hitting unintended targets, killing children? If you're committing a drive-by shooting, you are the worst kind of violent criminal. You know, it's one thing if you've got gang-on-gang violence and you go up and you kill another gang member. That's bad. But it's a different thing than putting your gun out a window, driving by a home, squeezing off 10 shots, not knowing where those bullets are going. You know, I did a story once on, for those of you who've lived around here, you'll know the story of Malaysia Grant. She was 1 year old, sitting in the back of her parents' car in Kent, Washington, when she was killed in a drive-by shooting. A bullet to her head. A bullet to her head. The disregard for human life that you have to commit a drive-by shooting and to think that there are elected lawmakers in our state whose priority during this time is to make life easier, is to make sentences shorter for people committing crimes with a gun, deadly crimes with a gun. Forgive me if I cannot wrap my mind around this. You know, Democrats want to talk about gun control and school shootings. They want to blame Republicans. But here are Democrats trying to lessen the punishment for a deadly crime with a gun. You tell me how that makes sense. You tell me how that's in line with Democratic values. And I'm not going to let this be one of those bills that gets all the way up to passage without much attention. It has so much momentum that it's too late, because there was a lot of that happening in Olympia last year. And it's not going to happen this year. We are at a time of rising crime, low police staffing, and the best way that you can think to spend your time and to use your power is to help violent criminals who kill people. I'm upset by this, and I'm disappointed in this. And again, I respect Tara Simmons so much, truly. I respect what she has done with her life. I respect who she is advocating for on the whole. I believe that she is doing some important work, but this is not important. And not only that, it's dangerous. Again, I've reached out to Tara Simmons. I do hope to be able to talk to her about this. I will come into that conversation with an open mind and an open heart, but it's going to take a lot of convincing for this proposal not to upset me in 20 different ways. When you use a gun to take a person's life, you do not deserve leniency. And Democrats, more than anyone else, should believe that. If Democrats are so concerned with gun violence, they really need to start showing it. The Undivided Podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. I also want to take this time, as I do on every podcast, to say thank you to an Undivided subscriber. While the podcasts themselves are free, I cannot continue to do this work without subscribers. If you haven't become one yet, you can do so at patreon.com/undivided or brandycruz.locals.com as well. And you get access to bonus content, including full interviews and early access to full digital episodes. Today, I want to thank Undivided subscriber Jason Linkum. Jason said he chose to become a subscriber to Undivided on Patreon so he could, quote, get information from like-minded people and hope this platform helps us band together to get Washington back on track to becoming the great state it once was when I grew up. I'll also note, Jason is owner of Parker Pacific Inc. It's a construction company in Buckley that's been in business for over 40 years, and he's a third generation owner. So thank you so much, Jason, for not only being a business owner in this environment, but for being a supporter of Undivided and for caring about the direction of the state that we all love. And that's it for this episode of the Undivided Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll have more Sunday on the digital show. In the meantime, thank you so much for being part of a movement aimed at giving common sense a comeback.